Capital Call on the way next on 1400 K1, brought to you by Phillips 66. Opportunity for me to spend a little bit of time this morning with Daryl Fincher. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood if you're a flower plant.
Yes, exactly. My last event, I was RSU was doing a fundraising breakfast out at the community center, and it was great to go out there and see what was going on and all the students that we'd helped, because the money contributed in Bartlesville. Help students right here in Bartlesville.
It is a great opportunity to self-fund some scholarships within the communities, particularly for the RSU Bartlesville campus.
Yes. So I had a good chance to talk to Dr. Rice about what they were doing and how they're moving forward with the campus, and talked to some students about their stories, you know, the support that the scholarships gave. One of our young men was talking about he's about to complete medical school, all with the help that's happened here in Bartlesville, so it's a great thing.
It is. Anytime that any student can graduate with any degree, I don't care if it's an associate's or a doctorate, either way, with less college debt these days, that's a good thing.
It is. You know, college graduates earn about $20,000 more a year than high school graduates, and it turns out you're going to work, you know, 30, 40 hours a week throughout your life anyway. Wouldn't you like the higher paycheck?
Most people, I would say, probably would take that. So it's a good thing all the way around. I think when you look at RSU Bartlesville, to be able to spend those classroom hours close to home, either whether the student is out on their own as a adult student returning to school or still living at home, either way, it's cheaper than going off to an in-residence college.
Well, it is, and I think one of the beauties of the regional university system we have is that they do have campuses in your local community. And so it's very helpful for those who have had to go to work right out of high school or they started a degree and didn't get finished. And there were several success stories, you know, and they're all over Bartlesville, if you just ask, about people who actually went and finished their degree, and it's helped their career tremendously. You know, it's a good boon for what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that you released some information over the past several days just as progress on different education-related bills, and I don't know if that's where you wanted to go this morning, but I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 at least that I have numbers in front of me that we can talk a little bit about if that's where you want to go.
Yeah, let's just talk about those briefly, and I've got a couple of other education bills, especially some Senate bills, but yes. I think one of the things people wanted to know when we were out on the trail, and part of the reason there was such a big change in the House this year of incumbents, is people wanted to see us work together and actually do things for Oklahoma. One of those top issues right now happens to be education. It was big last year. It continues to be big this year. One of the bills that we're running, and we talked about this, is a $1,200 pay raise that is over there at the Senate, and we really would like to see that happen. On top of that, of course, we're going to put money in the formula. Now, if you talk to teachers, everybody knows we can't get out of the hole we dug ourselves into overnight. It's going to take a while. And so,
We have stopped digging, so that's a good
first rule of holes. Stop when you find yourself in one. Stop digging, and we have stopped digging, and that's a very good thing. But the looking at the funding, the question is: do we hire more teachers and try to reduce class size right now by just putting the money in the formula and keeping the salaries the same? Or do we work on the problem that we're actually having to bring in people? We're up to almost 3,000 emergency certified teachers. And, you know, bless their hearts for being willing to do it. I did a mid-career switch into education. Long tale about how I did it, but I spent a lot of time in a classroom, a lot of coursework that I did. I spent a lot of time with teachers helping me, and I couldn't have walked into a classroom the first day and just did this. And sometimes we're asking people to do that, even with support. And we really need people who are trained teaching as a profession. You know, we can't forget that teaching is a profession, and it's not like it's just you can walk in and do it. There's a lot of theory that goes into that. And so to work on that, we have to keep people in the profession. We can't have them going off to other states. That has to be attractive for them to stay here right now. Mm-hmm. We also have to be able to keep them or attract new people into the profession and new certified teachers. And that was part of the reason for the pay raise going forward this year. And the other part, of course, is that our goal is to put additional money into the formula, though we don't know that yet. And then we've done a few other things, tax credit for teachers if they spend money out of their pocket for the classroom, We have some help with loan repayments. So we're working on those issues.
And you talk to board members, they're well aware of money in the formula versus money that bypasses the formula that frequently is, this is the only thing you can use it for, and if you don't use it, basically you don't get it sort of thing.
Well, actually, technically, all the money goes in the formula. And so this gets a little bit confusing to people. When we talk about a pay raise, we don't actually tell schools what to pay. We set a minimum salary schedule. So when we come out and we say we're doing a $1,200 pay raise, if you're paying above minimum, theoretically, you don't have to give the pay raise, but, you know, all your teachers are going to leave. And so when we do that, it's going to cost us $70 million that will go into the formula, into the state aid formula, that would be targeted towards the pay raise for teachers.
Right.
And so while they could use it for other things, they're going to give it for pay raises.
Fairly public common knowledge that this was the intended purpose of those dollars.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there is no hiding this. Everybody, it's well known within schools what the state pay scale looks like, everything else. And so even though many schools pay above it, they will continue to increase. Now, one interesting thing is we have some schools that are called off the formula, which is not, they're not really off the formula. What it means is the whole idea of the state aid formula is that we at least try to assure that every school has minimum resources. And it's very complicated. It's a complex formula, as it should be when you're talking billions and billions of dollars. But basically what happens is if you don't have enough property tax to make up for it, the state puts in money, and that's the state aid formula. And it's different for everyone. I've looked at the calculations for various districts. Mm-hmm. If you ever want to sit down and look at those, I can bore you in 30 minutes or less.
There are a lot of variables, and how they're all treated is different.
Right. But the ones who are off the formula, they have a huge tax base. You know, one place has a refinery in it. So the standard tax that you pay in your district exceeds that. They get no money from us. When we publish the pay raise and we say $1,200 pay raise, they're getting no money from us. But they're still going to have to go out and give a pay raise to their teachers there, because mm-hmm. they're going to be expecting it. But, you know, that's just the way it works. Our whole goal in the formula is not about giving money away. It's about assuring equity of opportunity for all students in Oklahoma.
And then I think it, but anyway, we'll go ahead, because I just wanted to at least define the formula, because I think the public sometimes doesn't get that information unless they go to board meetings or something.
Well, exactly. And it's a bit of inside baseball. And part of it is, how do I communicate to people about the formula? Just assume it tries to make sure everybody has a minimum amount per student based on the needs of those students. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a great tax base and you're way above that, you're not getting any money for it. So that's part of the way we're doing it. All those bills are now over in the House or in the Senate, and now they have to go through the Senate. It's really hard to get legislation passed, which I think people should be thankful for.
The mechanism is there to do it, but there are, because of, well, just all legislative action, I don't care if you're talking state or federal, there are ways that hopefully only the good bills go through.
That's correct. That is correct. A couple of other issues. I spent my yesterday afternoon at Mabel Bassett Correctional Center. It's a medium security correctional facility for women inmates. Mm-hmm. And that was a great tour. Spent time with the warden. He showed us around. We talked with the inmates who were in there. They've got a couple of programs I want to talk about. One of them is a cosmetology program where they actually are teaching the women in there, helping prepare them to be cosmetologists, to cut hair, do manicures, do pedicures, do everything. They've got to have, I believe it's 900 hours to get to that, or maybe 1,000, might be as much as 1,400. But because of the way the program works, there's no state money going into it. This is all donated funds supported by foundations and individual giving. Is when the inmates are released, the women are released, this foundation has actually set it up with the State Board of Cosmetology. They're able to take their exams inside the prison. They're able to get their license inside the prison. And they also have, the foundation also helps with placing them. And so within 2 days of being released, they're out there working, earning money. And that's one of the biggest challenges when we, you know, criminal justice reform is helping people earn money. And so that was a great trip. There's another one program there, another one funded by a foundation of helping students learn how to program. And then they also have a program of training dogs. And so we went into one of the cell blocks, and actually in a couple of the cells, there were small kennels in there with the dogs in there that they were training. There were other areas, of course, for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's these are great programs for the women that they have there. So I was so glad to see that.
Sounds like they're working to get them into productive society as soon as possible.
Yes, and we actually discussed that, and you can tell that the prison is overcrowded. Now, it's clean on the inside. You know, it's pretty Spartan, but it's clean on the inside. It's well run, but they had beds where you wouldn't put beds. They had beds in the day rooms and everything else, and it's just not a good situation for that. And so we're working on criminal justice reform. And, of course, one of the criminal justice reforms that we passed over to the Senate for them to work on is one where you can't deny an occupational license to somebody because so many, I think 30% of jobs require some sort of license, mm-hmm. unless the crime for which you were convicted was something directly related to that license. You can't work in a bank if you're, or be a CPA if you've been doing embezzlement, things like that.
If you've lost your insurance license, I'm sorry you lost your insurance license, you're not getting back in.
Yes, if you burn down your house for insurance fraud, you're not getting your insurance license back. That's yeah. right. So, you know, it's been a very learning situation. I've actually got a couple of bills that I've asked to be put on a committee calendar. I'm working with Senator Stanislawski on several of his bills. Mm-hmm. A little bit of inside baseball is getting these on the calendar when they come over from the Senate is no different than trying to get your bill heard on the calendar to start with. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to convince the chair of each committee that these bills go into that it's an important bill. And I was talking with the chair of, you know, the head of AMB, mm-hmm. Chairman Wallace. And there's one bill we decided to lay over till next year. Now, it passed out of the Senate, so it's fully eligible just to be picked up in the House next year and work on it.
Right.
But we felt it was best with that particular bill. But I've had another one that I'm working on. I'm working on one bill right now for virtual charter schools, statewide virtual charter schools. For people who may not be aware of those, any student in Oklahoma can enroll in one of our statewide virtual charter schools and attend school virtually, full-time, fully paid for by the state. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges we've had is what I call churn. Basically, a student will get upset with their local district mm-hmm. on Friday, you know, Friday or Monday, they've enrolled and they've transferred, and people say, oh, you know, school choice.
Sure.
Then after 3-4 weeks, they get tired of it and realize, oh, you know, you really do have to work hard at these virtual charter schools. It's not easy out. It's not for everybody. And they say, ah, it's just a school. They transfer to another one and enroll in another one. Don't like that, or they don't get their work done. And then, you know, couple of a month after that, they're back in their local school. And so it doesn't help the student. It, you know, and that's really, is this something that helps the student? So one of the bills, Senate Bill 148, is working on reducing that churn. We actually have an open transfer period in the summer and between semesters and winter break. And then there are other examples. And one of the biggest concerns is, well, if my child is bullied, can I pull them out of the school right now? And what if we didn't report the bullying? Well, all that's required in order to do that if your child is bullied is, one, report the bullying to your current school mm-hmm. before you switch. Upon trying to enroll into the other school, they want to verify that you had some bullying going on. And to do that, that can actually be your record of your communications with your current school. Mm-hmm. So if there's bullying, harassment, or intimidation, that's all the same sort of thing. It'll still be very easy to make a quick move into another school if you really need to get out of the situation. Of course, I'd really encourage people to work with their local school districts, and many school districts will work with them on that. But there's been a little bit of concern about that. I've been hearing from people where they've had some misinformation because they thought it just shut down all of that, and that's not correct at all.
I assume, and it's a bad thing to do because we're talking about, at least in one of his instances, a virtual school, that it must be a cyberbullying sort of situation then, since there's likely not a lot of face-to-face contact for a bullying situation in that matter.
Oh, thank you for clarifying that. Yes, I'm sorry. I get these in my mind. I go back and forth. I'm talking about in your local brick-and-mortar school district.
Okay.
If there's bullying, the biggest challenge is when kids move from their local brick-and-mortar, go to virtual, then in a short period of time, move to another virtual and move right back to their brick and mortar. And, you know, none of those problems are resolved. And so the whole idea is that, you know, you've actually had documented that there's something going on and you've contacted them. Now, it doesn't have to be contemporaneous. Let's say you find out that, you know, over the past 2 months, your child's been bullied and they really haven't told anybody. and now you're just finding out about it. You just go ahead and report that, you know, to your local district right away, and you know, that's sufficing for the reporting requirement.
Students don't talk to their parents about bullying. I don't understand.
You know, that is one of the real challenges we have, and that's something that's, you know, schools are really trying to work on, is how do they affect that. And as we all know, some schools are much better at addressing the problem than others. And so all schools are trying to increase their ability to do that.
And of course, it's tough because the school does have the student only a certain number of hours a day, and a confrontation in the hallway is probably much easier to observe than something that appears as a text message on the student's phone at 2 a.m.
That's exactly right. There is the cyberbullying that happens within schools. There's the intimidation. There's all the things that happen out of sight of teachers. I mean, think about when we were kids, right?
Yeah. Well, most of the time, we probably took the fight across the street from the school and we solved it. But anyway, things are different now.
Yes, that is correct. So, you know, that's just one I want to, I intend to clear that up. I'm writing a letter to all the representatives because they've been getting calls. The letter's basically going to say, look, they're mistaken. Here's the plain text. I ask people for the text of the bill. And that's one other thing, is if you want to talk about a bill with your representative, I know everybody's and their brother sending you information about what you should tell them. But it's really helpful if you've actually looked at the text of the bill, because what people were telling me did not match what is actually in the bill. And I don't know if they were looking at an old version or what.
Well, it helps if you're going to offer advice on a bill, if you have, like, if you're informed. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes. It means if you're informed, I will actually read it and understand it.
Well, I know that you are doing a great job of publicizing your contact information. Mm-hmm. It's obviously available on the House website, among other places.
It is. It's, daryl.fincher@okhouse.gov. Big thing, I'm just a 1L Daryl. I'm 2 R's, 2 E's, 1 L. That's D-E-R-R-E-L. I know it's not spelled like any place else in Oklahoma, but that's the way it is.
A lesson I learned during the campaign.
Some people are still learning that. you've seen things come out with my name's misspelled.
Even from the state, yes.
Yes. And so you can go ahead and do that. And I also do have a phone number.
And we can publicize that on the website as well.
Yes, and we will publicize that on the website, because I don't call it, and I'm temporarily drawn. It's 405-557-7358.
Daryl Fincher with us today on Capital Call. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you to Phillips for sponsoring this.
And we'll talk with your legislative team again next Friday on AM 1400 K1.
That's not the sound of a full tank. That's the sound of not missing her soccer game.